So we're going to discuss today different situations that came up in the Holocaust, very difficult situations, shilas that were presented that are very stirring and evocative and difficult, and discuss them in light of the halacha over here. And I drew from the Sefer of Mimamakim by Rav Oshri, who lived during that tkufa and was answering these shilas. I'll present them to you, and we'll try to understand them based on the Mar Mekoymes. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Dafayin Dalid, discusses the situations where a person would have to give up his life for Kiddush Hashem. Generally, there's a klal, there's a principle about this. If somebody comes to you, Gentile, and threatens your life with, if you don't contravene a certain halacha, a lav, a regular negative prohibition, I want you to eat this ham sandwich or I'll kill you. So what's the halacha? What do you do in that situation? You save your life. How do you know? Why? Torah says, not allowed. V'chai b'hem. Okay, good. So that there's a principle, there's a mitzvah in the Torah that says, that teaches us, v'chai b'hem, that the mitzvahs are given to live by and not to die. However, there are exceptions to that rule. First, notably, is what's called the Big Three. Okay, the Gimel Chamuris is Gilei Arayis, is immorality. Somebody said, I want you to have relations with a married woman. For example, the Gilei Arayis. Shvichas Damim, I want you to kill somebody. If not, I'll kill you. Or Avodah Zarah, idol worship. Any of those situations, even at pains of death, a person would give up their life. Okay, and the Gemara discusses how we learn that out. Chal Navshecha, it's the Pasuk in Shema, that tells you about Avodah Zarah. By the Ritzeach, by murder, it's a Svara. And that we learn out from there, we learn that out to immorality. Okay, so we have one exception to the Chai Behem, is that by the Gimel Chamuris, we'll call it, okay, the Big Three, that's idol worship, murder, and immorality, a person gives up their life, notwithstanding the principle of a Chai Behem. The Gemara goes on to delineate other exceptions to the principle of a Chai Behem, where a person would give up their life, even if it's not one of the Gimel Chamuris, the Big Three. And that is, if it was this contravention, this Avera, was to be done Birabim, Bifarhesia, which the Gemara defines as being in front of 10 Jews. So if somebody says, I want you to eat this sandwich over here, this ham sandwich, in front of this group, then you would not be able to do that. You'd give up your life. As well, if it's what the Gemara calls Shas Tashmad, this was an epic that the local government was trying to uproot Judaism. It was during that time. And then even if it would not be in front of 10 Jews, even just in front of that guy, that Gentile, you would give up your life instead of contravening even a regular negative prohibition. The Gemara qualifies that, those exceptions, and says that's only where the Gentile is trying to get you to contravene this, because he doesn't want you to keep Hashem's mitzvahs. He wants you to contravene the prohibition. But if it's for his own pleasure, so then it would be mutter, even if it would be berabim in public, okay, as well l'chura as shas shmar. Okay, but there's a little bit of a discussion about that. So, if somebody said to you, I want you to mow my lawn on Shabbos, it's right outside, everybody sees, or I'll kill you. People are walking home from shul. Are you allowed to do it or not? What do you say?
Depends on why he says yes.
It depends on why. So if he's trying to get you, right, to give up your religion, he doesn't want you to keep Shabbos, so then you would give up your life. But if it's because he just wants his lawn to be mowed, and you were the hapless fellow that was walking by at the time, okay, he doesn't care, you keep the mitzvahs, you don't, he just wants his lawn to be mowed, so then even though it was Berabim, you would give up your life for that. You would not give up your life for that. Sorry. The Rambam, the Chinuch, they say, you know, very beautifully, Kiddush Hashem, Bet Ribbono Shel Olam, Melech Malchei HaMelachim, the King, this is our life, that's their job to publicize our faith and not to be scared before those that would compel us. And the Chinuch says that even, you know, in today's world we have examples of this, the Secret Service, right? So they're ready to take a bullet, you know, for the president. It's not so strange, right? People go off into the army, they volunteer. They're ready to take on for the team. So Achas Kama Bakama, certainly for the King of all Kings, and that's what we dedicate our lives for Kiddush Hashem. We should be mukhan, we should be ready to give up our lives. Another prat over here, and Reb Fred asks me this morning when we're learning together, what happens if somebody says, I want you to eat this ham sandwich, or I'll kill you? It's not a time of decree, it's not Berabim. What do we say that you do? You eat it. Okay, why? Because it says v'chai behem. But what happens if you lived b'kedusha your whole life in sanctity and purity, and you would never eat something that you didn't prepare yourself, you didn't know was kosher, and you were always scrupulous in what went into your mouth, and it's impossible for you to consider eating this, to transgress the word of my Maker, and you're ready to give up your life? Are you allowed to or not? You're not allowed to? It's like suicide. It's like, you're not taking your own life.
Well, it would be like not taking, if there's a medicine that can save your life, and you refuse to take the medicine.
Right, so I'm not talking about just jumping off a bridge for no reason.
That's an example, though, of passive suicide.
Okay.
You have something that will definitely save your life.
Right. But here the reason that you're giving your life up is not to contravene the mitzvah and the Torah.
But you're violating
a different mitzvah.
Okay. So many of the people in the audience said that you're not allowed to give up your life. And I think that they identified correctly the reason for that as well. The Torah says v'chai behem. V'chai behem doesn't mean, it's not, according to this, just a rishus, a permission, okay, not to give up your life in those situations. It's a mitzvah, v'chai behem. That's what the Torah is telling you to do. So if it's operating over here, v'chai behem, so you would be, that would be your obligation. And indeed, the Rambam says that unequivocally, twice in the halachas that we have over here, in Yisaydi HaTorah Parakei. Did you see that? And this is Parakei Halacha Aleph. He says, Yavra v'lo yaharig. Okay? Somebody asks a guy to do something, that's the halacha, if it's not one of the Gemach Hamuras. Shnemar b'mitzvah, Satra Yasa, Oysam ha'adam v'chai behem, he quotes the pasuk, v'lo yishim ois behem. V'meis, the end of halacha aleph, v'lo yavar, if he dies and he does not transgress the avera, hareza mischayiv b'nafshoy. Okay? That means he's culpable for his own life, and the Rambam reiterates this in halacha dalet as well. So there's no ambiguity, okay, in the Shitas HaRambam. L'maisa, there are other Rishonim that dispute this, okay, the Kesef Mishnah brings it down, and so is Paskind in Shulchan Aruch, is based on a Taisvis in Avodah Zarah. The Rush brings it down over there in Perek Sheni, Siman Tes. Okay, that somebody does have Rishos to give up their life if they choose. Okay, so I think the Olam said something that's very mistaver. They explained it very well, that V'chai Behem is a mitzvah, and that's an obligation. Mitzvahs aren't just, permission. So that was very well expressed. These Rishonim apparently learned that it's not an obligation to be Iver because of the mitzvah, but it's a Rishos. And the Shulchan Aruch Paskins like that. This is the Siman Kufnun Zayin, Suf Aleph, Kol Aver Shebetayra, Chutz Me'avoid Tzgachavim, V'gilei Arayos, Shvichas Damim, Im Amrun Loi La'adam, Sheya'avra Aleihem Ayaharig, Im Hu Betzina, Ya'avra V'Ayaharig. Right? This is the case that we're talking about. Somebody comes to you, it's not Barabim. It says, I want you to contravene this negative prohibition. It's not one of the Gimel Chamuris, the big three. So what's the Halacha V'chai Bahem? Okay, he transgresses it and he lives. The Mechaber continues, Vim yirtza lahachmir al atzmai v'leharig rishai. If he wants to be over, if he wants to give up his life and not be over, he has permission to do that. Im ha'evik echavim mechavim lahavir al adas. This is if the guy is intending. Okay, there's a little bit of a qualification here, admittedly, that if he's trying to make him transgress the Avera. So that would...
But then it should be an obligation. We just said... He's trying to make...
It's not Shas Tashmar. It's just, in other words, it's one situation where a particular... Okay. You're right. If it's a more global, situation, then you'd be correct. That if it was like a decree, if it was a melech, it was the government, so then that would be Shas Tashmar. Here we're talking about just the individual.
Right.
Okay, is trying to get you to do that. So then a person's rishai. Okay, it's pretty mashma over here if he's just trying for his own benefit.
For fun. You can't even...
You would not be able, okay,
yeah,
even according to the Mechaber's opinion, to give up your life. Okay. What happens, and then we'll move on to some of the shailas that I called, and we'll discuss them, but I just want to kind of highlight the ikar klalim, the main principles over here, that are operating. What happens if it's during one of those terrible times in Jewish history and they're looking for Jews to kill? Rahman al-Islam, God forbid. And somebody comes to you, you have a little disguise on, and they say, are you Jewish? And he has a very scary looking machete in his hand, okay, that he's very ready to use. So what's the right answer in that situation? Could you say, no, I'm not Jewish? It's kind of consequential, right? So you don't want to say the...
is that considered a Avodah Zarah? So you're not Jewish?
That's just my
fish. Okay.
That's the one side. Or the other side, is it really Shas HaShemad if they're trying to kill it? They're trying to be Mavir on the mitzvah, so they just want to... I mean, is the Holocaust itself Shas HaShemad?
Okay, these are all good questions. These are all good questions, yeah.
Not saying you're not Jewish doesn't mean you're an Obed Tzavi, you could be a Ben Noah.
These are all very good, these are all very, very good points.
Who knows, it could be a Ben Noah, though. For you it is to say you're a... No, you see, really, I'm saying you're Christian, you're just saying you're not Jewish, meaning you're believing in
so let's read the Mechaber, and there were some very, very, very good points in the audience that maybe we'll get back to. But the Mechaber actually discusses this. Now, this is not as clear in the Sugya. The sources are much more obscure than what we've discussed until now, where it's really Mefurish in the Gemara. on Sanhedrin, although the Rishonim do have sources for it, but they're not as explicit and straightforward. And it's based essentially on a rush in the Avodah Zarah, the second parak. And the Mechaber brings it down in Halacha. This is in, again, Simon Kufnun Zayin, in Yordea. Sif Beis, Asa la Adam loy mar shu ayvi kechavim, kidei shalai yihargu. It's forbidden for him to say that he's an Ovid Kochavim, a Gentile, in order that they not kill him. Alam Kidei Shalay Yakiru Shuhu Yehudi Mishana Mabushai Bishasakzer Mutter Kivin Shena Oimer Shuhu Ovid Kochavim. But the Mechaber says that he could disguise himself to look like a Gentile. He's not allowed to say, I'm a Gentile. But he's allowed to disguise himself if they ask him, are you a Jew or not? Then, you know, the game is over. But until that time, he could, you know, give off the impression through disguise that he's a Gentile and that's mutter.
Is Ovi Kochom here Nafka? Unless you live in a society. Also, in the Holocaust, everyone was Christian, so basically.
Yeah.
You're saying that you're making a statement that you're a Christian if you weren't.
Yeah. Okay, this is a good point.
Let's say you were in a society where everyone was B'nai Noach. They kept.
Right. So I think. This is a good point. If you look at the Lashon of the Rush over there, Ovi Kochavim means somebody that's an idolater. That's the way, you know, loosely we translate that as a Gentile.
Is that the correct way? Is that a sense? Or everything's changed up by the sense?
Yeah. But, well, you're making a very good point over here, that if somebody would just say, you know, being an atheist, is also you being kaifer, right? God's essence. But you say I'm not a Jew, right? I'm a believing guy. Okay, that could be different, okay, than that. So that's a good question, you know, whether on a situation what that would mean. Okay. If you look at the Lashon of the Rush, I think that it supports your point. That saying that you're an Ovei Kochavim would be saying that the language in that situation, they were assuming that means that you're saying you're an idolater. Okay, now, the Rama over here says something that's very interesting. And, right here in Sif Beis, right after this Mechaber. And he says that, notwithstanding the psak of the Mechaber, that you can't say that you're Gentile, mikol makom yachol loymer lehem shuhu lashon demishtam l'tre apin. You could say something, a double entendre, that has two different understandings.
I'm an American.
Something like that. And the Ovei Kochavim, he'll understand it that you're saying that you're a Gentile. But him, he'll be mechavin, he means something else in his heart. Okay, so this is interesting because the whole problem over here is really that you're giving the impression that you're going, when you say that, no, I'm a Gentile, you don't mean to renounce, you know, your Judaism, you're not doing a Maisa Avodah, you're not bowing down. Really all you're doing is conveying that you're a Gentile. And that itself seems to be very problematic. So it's very interesting, this qualification, that if you say something, again, to him it's the same, he's getting the same message as before, but since the words, okay, could also carry with it something else, then it's mutter. So this is a very interesting distinction, okay, that makes a difference, but that's what the Paiskim say, and I believe that comes from the Nemukei Yosef. In Bava Kamma, I believe. Okay? So, based on some of these principles and preambles, I just want to go through some very interesting and evocative shailas that were presented. Just one more prat I would mention from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, if it's done b'shas HaShmad, during a time of Shmad, decree, or berabim. It's even if it's a mitzvah kala, the Gemara says, you have to give up your life. So that means, the Gemara basically, seemingly, that means like a minhag, like the Rishonim explained, something that's not even necessarily a prohibition, but even a minhag taiv, that they would wear something distinct, they would have distinct clothing, the Jewish people, to make themselves unique from the Gentiles, and the Gentiles said, we want you to change that up, right? We don't want you to look like a Jew anymore. So even though there was no aveira in that, but since it's the minhag taiv and it's either berabim or shas hashmad, that would be included.
Does anyone make the point that perhaps the Shoah, because you could be the most assimilated Jew in the world and your life was forfeit, as far as the Nazis were concerned, they had very clear, you know, once they reached their final solution, that was basically it. So. Argue that it wasn't really
okay, so this is a very good point, and
Rabbi Yitzchak was making this. Especially now with the politics, a lot of people hate Jews because of what Israel does to the Palestinians. This has nothing to do with Shmad, trying to be moderate on the missiles, per se.
Yeah.
They hate us for politics. So, that's the same example. The question is, that's considered Shas HaShmad.
Right, so that's a very good point, and I think, kind of rare that most poskim, from the little bit of research that I did, seem to accept what you're saying. There could be certain situations that they were trying to make us transgress mitzvahs. But as Shas HaShmad, I believe that your reasoning is mostly accepted by the Paiskim, and there they were just uprooting us as a people and not as a religion.
You know, the Nazis made a special point of going after religious things.
Right. There could be arguments on both sides. I believe that that's the preponderance of the poskim that discuss this. I believe that they... but that's an important factor over here. So I'll start off with a question over here. I won't read the whole thing inside for purposes of time. But it was very common, the Jewish people there removed their beards because the kind of gave them a very conspicuous look as Jews and highlighted them for abuse and ridicule and torture. And there were two Jews over there that he says that did not. And the question became, he was in the camp, and he didn't have any other implements. He didn't have a kosher shaver, okay, to use. He only had a razor. Okay, now a razor, to remove your beard with a razor, that's what? That's a lav, okay? That's a negative prohibition. So his question was, he didn't have any other way of removing his beard. Would he be able to do that with a razor, because of the danger? This was a question that was posed to Rabbi Chaim Oshri. What's the answer? What do you think?
Not one of the big three.
He says a Shema, but they're not asking him to do that per se.
He's doing it to be anonymous. And in fact, we see here that the Machaber says that you could wear kilayim, for example, or is that
right?
So that's also a lot.
Right. So it seems to be pretty open shut, right? Over here, it's a shayla of sakanas nefashis. His life's in danger. It's just it's a lav. It's bikuach nefashos. It's allowed to do that. Now, somebody may say, well, he's disguising himself as a guy. I don't think that's really the situation over here. He's in the camp of the Jews. But even if he would be, right, that would be mutter based on the Ramah coming from the Nemukah Yosef.
He didn't shave it halacha
right
either.
And he's not, and like you said, he's not removing the beard because it's not Shas HaShmad, because the Nazis told him. He's doing it just to preserve his life, because it would endanger him. So that seems to be open shots. seemingly, and that's indeed what Rabbi Shri paskins. Okay. Next question. Somebody had an opportunity to purchase a baptismal certificate, which, if he could escape into the forest, would enable him to join the partisans. Had a certificate that he was baptized. Okay, now people that know a little bit of the history around that time, the partisans themselves, okay, they were kind of a motley crew. They had their own anti-Semitism, and they weren't so fond of Jews either. But if he had a baptismal certificate, then they would accept him, and that would possibly save his life. So the question is he allowed to procure that and to display that in order to save his life?
It's hard to me for me to believe that the partisans necessarily even would believe somebody doing that.
Yeah, I mean, if he was like, you know, if he went with like a Strymal and Payas and was speaking Yiddish, I don't know if the certificate would throw them off. But apparently, there were other, you know, maybe he didn't look so Jewish. He had, you know, a disguise on.
How is that different than the Muranos in Spain?
That was a very difficult shailas. So what do you say over here, Mr. Greengard? What's
I would think that the thing is this really going to save your life?
Okay, so you're saying maybe it's not, that's the point.
Yeah. Maybe it's not you saving your life.
Yeah, it's just a way that you think that you could further your chances. Okay, but let's say, let's just assume that it would.
That would make the case weaker. It's not
yeah.
Right.
Everybody's waiting for you, Mr. Greengard, to pass him this difficult shaila.
Okay.
So this is a Shver Shaila, right? This isn't so simple.
Mentioned, you know, you can't wear a Shrimal with it, otherwise it's not going to believe it. But they could also check to see if he was circumcised.
Right.
And if they didn't bother to do
everybody knew that.
It was very easy.
It's actually, your point is actually, it gets involved in the Yishalmi and Avodah Zarah and the Rush. We could talk about it afterwards. It's interesting that the Yerushalmi seems to indicate that it's mutter to say that you're not a guy, and the Rishonim are marchet based on such an idea. But
mutter to say that you are a guy.
That saying disguising yourself when you're a yid as a guy isn't so simple, because they could check if a person is mahal or not. So to present a baptismal certificate that's not so simple in light of the Machaber Paskins, then it's forbidden to say that you're Novi Kechavim, and this is not like you said right here, you're saying that you're baptized. So indeed, Rav Oshri Paskins, that baptismal certificate only has one connotation, and that he's forsaken his Creator, and it's forbidden for a Jew to use one, even though he believes wholeheartedly in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's commanded to sanctify God, and he concluded that there's no way of allowing a baptismal certificate, even if one expected to save his life with it. Okay, and this is coming from that halacha, okay, obviously, of that it's Asur Leimar, She'ini Yehud, that he's an Ovei Kechavim. Okay, now listen to this. Another question, there was a Jew that was imprisoned in Kovno, in the ghetto, And he didn't have a Jewish name. His appearance wasn't particularly Jewish. And he thought that he could escape, you know, based on disguising himself like a Gentile. But he wanted to know if he could complete the deception by writing in his passport the two letters RC. To show that the bearer of the passport was a Roman Catholic. So if somebody inspected the passport, they would see that he was a Roman Catholic by birth. He wanted to know if it's permissible or forbidden. Okay, nowadays, I believe that we have that your religion is it's in the Western countries, is marked on your passport, but that was common then. And if you put RC in his passport, that would, you know, complete the picture and disguise that he was a Gentile. So the question was, is that mutter or that's not?
Seems like a similar child to the previous one.
Similar.
What would be different?
This is life and death. We can't just be happy with similar.
It's not specific as saying
that. Uh-huh. Okay.
Just say RC.
Okay.
I think that what's written on a passport is less. I mean, you write on the passport, they won't even have written on the passport. Like, people aren't. It's not like a document of who you really are. It's like what the authorities want to see. Kind of. I mean, they decide what's on it, kind of. You don't even decide that you want to have that there in the first place or not. I mean, I would treat the passport as like a document. It's owned by the government. It's a document for what they want to see for you.
That's
I mean,
interesting.
You want the passport to say what's best for you.
It's understood. It's just what they want to see.
I mean, even in your passport, you care what it says. You want it to be whatever is going to get you into the most countries. I mean, it's not like personal. It's owned by the... Today, passport is owned by the government, technically, right? Same thing.
Why is it different from a baptismal certificate? Even that, also, he could have converted since then.
I don't know. I see a baptism... It's not so different, but I think a passport is like a government thing that is kind of removed from you. Like, people are not going to display their passport that this is who my identity is. It's the government's description of you, and you don't care what they write as long as it gives you the most rights to go places. The baptismal certificate is something that you present as something you... This is you. I mean, in general, it's a title.
Fred, what do you say, Fred?
I think they're different.
Okay.
I'm going to say I think it's probably okay.
Okay, why?
I don't know why.
Is it ambiguous? Is the only issue?
Okay.
Is it ambiguous?
Maybe RC is a cul-de-sac, isn't it?
The government knows what
RC
it means.
RC
doesn't
mean only one thing, though.
But to them, it means one thing.
I understand.
That was the document. I mean,
the baptismal thing is it's given by the church.
Yeah,
that's what he's saying. This is a civil thing.
It's a civil thing, and it's not something that you're writing. The governor could have made a mistake and wrote it. I mean, they're writing it based on how they describe.
So Rav Oshri says,
I
ruled that he might write the two letters RC, for even though the non-Jews would think that they mean that he is a Roman Catholic, he was free to have in mind the Hebrew meaning of the two letters. It was irrelevant how the non-Jews would construe those letters.
Okay,
so like some of the audience said, this is different, right? There's ambiguity. And where does that? What's the source for that?
We just said that.
This is the Ramah. Okay, I think coming from the Nemukei Yosef, that if it has two connotations, okay, it's mutter to say. You can't say explicitly that you're a God, you're an idolater, but if there's something that has ambiguity, and it could be interpreted, even though the common interpretation and likely interpretation, what you know they're going to interpret it, would be that you're a Gentile, it's still mutter. So even though RC, they're going to interpret as Roman Catholic, maybe, you know, you're saying that you're a Rosh Kollel. and then you're good. Okay? Okay. We have time for some more? This is a little bit different. This was just really during the time of the Holocaust. It wasn't about saving yourselves in face of an enemy trying to kill you. But in the ghetto, there were people that were very, very weak, and there was like kind of an ad hoc makeshift hospital over there. And Yom Kippur was coming. And the question was, the sick patients, they wanted to fast on Yom Kippur. And the doctor over there, the director of the hospital, said that's not such a good idea, and he called in Rav Oshri, okay, to implore the patients that they're forbidden. It's a very, you know, to read it inside is very, very, very moving. The mysterious nefesh that they had.
Today, those of us that are prone physicians often deal with these things today with older people.
Right, right. So he said that first he would clarify the halacha to satisfaction, and then he would do everything in his power, once he comes to conclusion, to influence them not to endanger their lives by an unnecessary fast. What was his conclusion?
Same thing now. I mean, if the doctor tells
and tzvachai b'hem.
Yeah.
Okay? Eating Yom Kippur is a very serious prohibition. Right. There's no... L'chura, the halacha is clear, and the doctor definitely concluded that it would endanger their lives. It wasn't, you know, we fast, Baruch Hashem, we're healthy, and after the fast, we eat well, we replenish our body, and in those conditions, you know, they weren't going to get a big ice fast at home like we have, and it would be literally endangering their lives. So he spoke his words with deep concern, and he got through to the patients, and they promised that they would heed the doctor's instructions. Listen to this. One patient, however, who had always been non-religious, stubbornly insisted on fasting that year, and refused to accept my explanation that in his weak condition it was imperative to eat. Regrettably, the man died on the night after Yom Kippur. The other patients told me that he had wept throughout the entire day, apparently confessing all the sins of his life in order to die a repentant Jew. It's a very, very moving tshuva. Last Shiloh over here talks about that the Germans, essentially, without getting reading the whole Shaila inside, they forbade the Jews to convene, to daven and to learn together. They asked tefillah and limud haTorah. And the question was, do they have to give up their lives for that or not? He ends up the whole account over here. Rav Naftali Weintraub, the Gabbai of the Gapanovich Shul, may God avenge him, asked me whether Torah law obligated him to risk his life to pray with his daily minion and compelled him to risk his life for Torah study. What do you say?
We learn that from Rabbi Akiva, don't we? I mean, I don't know if that's, you know,
okay.
But he has that, he dealt with that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing something, you're not...
Question is, are you obligated?
You're not over directly something. Like, you're not actually...
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a very important point.
It's a lack of doing something, but it's
mm-hmm.
a little different.
Mm-hmm.
They're not this many, could have had the other... It's not like... First of all, it's not... I mean, they're not telling you... I mean, they're not telling you to make this a vera.
Yeah. Okay, that's an important factor. Yeah.
It's a question about it's an asi. I mean, it's asi to learn, but you can learn in any way.
Yeah.
You can learn in your mind. I mean, you can do
yeah.
time the asi in other ways of learning Torah.
Where do
yeah.
you draw the line if they say, don't put on tefillin, don't eat
yeah.
matzah and pesach?
Yeah.
It's the same question. That's a good question. Don't
right. So these are all very good points.
Even a stronger question. Tefillin is direct asi. But I think, yeah, that's a good question. Is it also...
So this gets involved in a lot of different factors, a lot of them that were mentioned here in the audience. First of all, is it considered Shas Shmad or not? Now, clearly over here, they're doing it because they don't want them to study Torah. But that doesn't necessarily make the whole Tkufa Shas Shmad. You know, that's, you know, that would be defined, I think, more globally than in this situation. Clearly over here, in this situation... their intent is for them, okay, not to be religious. Does that make a shashmat or not? I don't know. I don't think that that's defined situationally. So that's one factor. Another factor is, over here, it's Shev Al Tasa, exactly. What happens, let's say it would be Shas Shmad, okay? And somebody says, I don't want you to shake Lulav and Esrog. Or it's in front of 10 people.
But you're not making a sign of...
You're not doing something.
You could be doing it privately.
Let's say in front of 10 people, okay, somebody says, I don't want you to shake Lulav and Esrog today. It's a mitzvah. Right? Remember, the Gemara says even a minig, right? Even a mitzvah kala, you'd give up your life if it was berabim in front of 10. How about if the Gentile said, I don't want you to shake Lulav and Esrog. I don't want you to say Kriya Shema in front of 10 people. Would you give up your life for that?
Unless you're saying you're in front of those 10 people all day and they know you're not going to shake.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could have...
Right.
The actual act of not shaking right now. Yeah, right.
Saying
you're not going to do it at all, and it's not...
Right. What do you say? So this isn't so clear. It seems like most Rishonim. You can look at Namukha Yosef over here. Tosfos. Shev Al Tas, you're not doing a Maisa. Most Rishonim seem to say that it's Pashat, that you would not be compelled to give up your life. Okay? The Lacha Mishnah over here in the Rambam, in Parakei, Lacha Dalet learns in the Rambam that you would be obligated to give up your life. Okay, even Shev Al Tasa, even not to do a mitzvah. But it seems to me like the preponderance of Rishonim hold that you would not be obligated in that situation.
Wouldn't that be limited to... wouldn't the Lacha Mishnah be talking about if they say... never ever do this, you know, while we're in power watching over you, as opposed to just 10 people right now saying don't do it for the next 5 minutes.
Or don't do it for the whole day.
Yeah. So those cases...
The case would be more a case that Lacha Mishnah would probably be talking about, but if I'm understanding you correctly, the other situation where you're in front of 10 people right now for the next hour, do not... or they're watching you for the entire time.
Yeah.
For this morning.
Yeah.
Then you might
so generally, if you look at the Gemara and most of the Paiskim, they learn that those two cases are identical in the halachas. If it's a Shas Shema, the time of decree, or in front of 10 Jews, it has the same dinin. They're equivalent. That's kind of the mashmos of the Gemara. That seems to be the way most Paiskim learn. There is a Bach, if you look in the Torah, that's medayik from the Torah and makes discrepancies between them. Okay? But generally, the mashma'ut of the sugya is that they have identical dinim, okay, where it applies. Okay, so over here, it's, you know, these are some of the factors. And... one question just to add to that is, would you be able to learn? If you want to, one question is, are you obligated to give up your life? And the other part of the question is, let's say you wanted to continue to learn. You said, Nafshi chashko b'tayra, I can't survive without learning, without davening. So I'll just read what he says inside over here. I did not have the heart to rule that every Jew should risk his life in order to study Torah or pray with a minyan. There were a few with a purity of thought that could raise them to the level of a Daniel and his comrades, Hanan and Mishael and Azariah, who risked their lives to sanctify God even when they were not bound to. On the other hand, how could I forbid anyone to risk his life? All Jews possess holy souls that originate at the highest level above, and according to the halacha, each individual must probe the degree of his personal love and awe of God to determine his level of services to God and his consequent right or duty to make sacrifices. Beyond any doubt, the Master of Justice and Mercy guides each person to act with sensitivity. In fact, the sacred sons of the living God acted as they had always done. They continue to study Torah and to pray with their fellow Jews. Even on Rosh Hashanah, of 5703, September 12th and 13th, 1942, the Jews did not fear that the Germans would hear the powerful blast of the shofar during prayer. So essentially, it's very, very moving and powerful. What he's answering over here is the Jews are not obligated, okay, to give up their lives, but neither could he tell them that they're obligated not to study and to pray if they were so moved to do that. Okay, so, you know, this may touch on what we spoke before about the machlokas with the Rambam and the other Rishonim. If a person that wants to endanger himself to give up his life, if he's permitted to or not. Now over here, admittedly, they're not giving up their lives. They're endangering their lives. Okay? So perhaps even, you know, the Rambam would agree over here. So these are just, you know, some of the questions that the Gemara, based on the principles of the Gemara, that come to life and that are part of our legacy as proud and inspired Jews to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in very difficult circumstances. So, should have a wonderful day, and I thank the yeshiva again for hosting this and inviting me, and thank you very much for joining us.